are spiritual. They're taking away your right to make everything personal when it's not personal. Your consciousness may be aware of the moment in front of you, but you did not create that moment. You're simply being given this wonderful opportunity to experience a moment in creation. It took billions of years to get here. Be sure you don't miss it. People make such a big deal out of science versus God, as if the two are at odds with each other. The real problem is that people don't truly believe in either. If you believe that science explains the creation of all things, you would live your life with a constant awareness that everything you're interacting with is emanating from the quantum field, pulling itself together into atoms and molecules, then appearing as the form before you. You would not like it or dislike it. You would be in awe of it. Likewise, if you really believed God was the creator of all things, you would live in awe and appreciation of the marvel of the divine creation. You would not like it or dislike it. You would be blown away that it even exists. You live in a world where a seed falls on the ground and it has a built-in chemist that knows how to break down the molecules of dirt and water, mix them with sunlight, and combine those substances into a corn stalk or a tree. You're taught that this intelligent chemist is the complex DNA molecule. Where did this amazing molecular structure come from? All its elements were forged in the stars and then naturally got pulled together into the DNA structure by the four fundamental forces: gravity, electromagnetism, and the strong and weak nuclear forces. Human intelligence had nothing to do with the creation of DNA, yet DNA is responsible for all the plant and animal life on Earth. We live in a world that is so perfect, it should constantly blow our minds. But we are so lost in making it all personal that we miss both the greatness of science and the greatness of God. We began this exploration by asking what it's like for you in there. You know that you're in there. What is the nature of the experiences you're having? To answer this, we explore the origin and nature of the outside world in which you live. Hopefully, you have more respect and appreciation for it right now. That moment in front of you is special. You might want to practice appreciating it and noticing the effect that has on your life. Next, we're going to work with the mind and its thoughts, then the heart and its emotions. They don't come in through your senses, but they are certainly things you experience. As we comb through each layer, it's going to become easier and easier to let go, to accept and surrender. Remember, you are not surrendering life. You're surrendering your resistance to life. We can use the term mindfulness to mean that you're always conscious of what is really going on around you and inside of you. You're not just conscious of the appearance of things, but also their true nature, where they come from, why they are the way they are, and what it took for them to manifest before you. Mindfulness is a natural, effortless process once you let go of the personal distractions. Instead of thinking that the moment in front of you has to be a certain way, you start thinking that it's pretty awesome the way it is. In fact, it's amazing that it even exists. From now on, everywhere you look and everything you interact with, be sure to say thank you. And be sure to pay tribute to the stars. They're not just romantic things twinkling in the night sky. They're the furnaces of the universe. They've created everything for you. Can you thank them? Can you appreciate this truth and understand that you didn't do anything to deserve the trees, the ocean, and the sky? You don't even know where you came from. You're just in there experiencing this amazing gift unfolding before you. This is spirituality, coming into harmony with reality instead of your personal self. Part 3, The Mind. Chapter 11, Empty Mind. As a conscious being, you're aware of the world coming in through your senses, but your awareness is not limited to that outside world. You also have inner experiences. Sometimes when the world comes in, it makes you feel good. Other times, it makes you feel bad. Since the outside world is really just structures of atoms, why does it have that inner effect on you? How could a bunch of atoms get you all jumbled up inside? What's going on? You're capable of experiencing three distinct things: the outside world, the mind, and the emotions. Now that we have deeply examined the nature of the outside world, let's start our journey into understanding the second object of consciousness, the mind. What is mind? We all know what mind is. We're in here, and we experience it every day of our lives. In the simplest sense, mind is a place in which thoughts exist. We have thoughts all the time. Why is he driving so slow? I'm going to be late. Now what am I going to do? Undoubtedly, these are thoughts. But where do they exist? They certainly don't exist in the outside world. Scientists are not able to read your thoughts as hard as they have tried, but you can. There's not a machine they've ever made, even for billions of dollars, that can read your thoughts. Yet you can, effortlessly. That's a pretty amazing power you have. Take a moment to digest that fact. Your consciousness has the ability to be aware of things that machines can't detect, thoughts and emotions. These objects of consciousness surely exist, but not in what we define as the physical world. Our scientists have shown us that the whole universe comes down to energy. Thoughts and emotions are simply energy vibrating at such a high rate that machines can't detect them. Someday they might be able to. Machines couldn't detect gamma rays, X-rays, or even infrared light until we made machines that could pick up those subtler vibrations. Scientists didn't then classify these higher vibration objects as something alien to our world. They simply expanded the definition of the electromagnetic spectrum to include them. It's not that the higher vibrations hadn't always been there. We simply hadn't been able to detect them. Likewise, your thoughts are there and have always been there. What if a scientist told you, no, your thoughts are not there. I can't detect them, so they don't exist. You'd walk away and laugh. You know your thoughts are there. You, the same conscious awareness we've been discussing, have the ability to pay attention to or not pay attention to the thoughts being created at this higher vibration of energy. Through the years, people have called this higher range of vibrations the mental plane. Many questions come up regarding this topic of mind. For example, what are thoughts and where do they come from? Since scientists don't have direct access to your thoughts, only you can answer these questions. You're in there, and you have the ability to look at your mind. You even use the terms my mind and my thoughts. You say, I had a terrible thought the other day. My thoughts are really bothering me lately. How do you know you had a terrible thought? How do you know that your thoughts are bothering you? You're in there, so you know what it's like to be in there experiencing thoughts. You can think of mind as a very high vibration field of energy in which thoughts can be created. Mind is not the thoughts. Mind is the field of energy in which the thoughts are capable of existing. Just as clouds are not the sky, but they exist in the sky and are formed out of the substance of the sky, so thoughts are not the mind, but they exist in the mind and are formed out of the substance of mind. Buddhists talk about empty mind. In the purest sense, that is what we're referring to when we use the term mind. It is a field of energy with nothing in it. There are no thoughts. There's just an absolutely still, formless field of energy we call mind. This is not conceptual. You can go there. Meditators who've gone deep understand this. You just rest in the void, an empty mind. You're there, but there are no thoughts. It's just completely quiet, completely empty. It's like a powerful computer that has no software on it. The computer has great potential, but it doesn't do anything. That is what empty mind is. It's not stupid. In fact, its latent capabilities are enormous, but it is simply still, not creating thoughts. Basically, that is what Buddhists mean by empty mind, and it is our starting point for understanding mind. The outside world exists independent of this field of mind. Whether the mind is still or the mind is noisy, the planet continues to spin on its axis, and all the galaxies continue to float through space. The energy that makes up the physical plane is at a grosser vibration rate than the energy that makes up the mental plane. From our own personal experience, you know that consciousness is capable of being aware of both the physical plane and the mental plane at the same time. Now that we've examined the concept of empty mind, let's begin the process of forming objects in the field of mind. In order for you in their consciousness to be aware of the physical plane, you are given a physical body to house the five senses that pick up sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. This body is a gift that the stars gave you and that evolution perfected. Because of the senses, the vibrations from the outside world come in. They pass through the sensory receptors, up the sensory nerves, into the brain, and then manifest in the mind where you experience them. This rendering of the outside world is one of the most basic functions of mind. It's very much like watching a ball game being played in California while you're in Florida. The actual physical light and sound vibrations are picked up by the cameras at the game. They are then digitized and transmitted to a receiver at your home. The received signals are then rendered onto your flat-screen TV. It seems like you're looking at the game, but you are not. You're looking at the rendering of the transmitted signals that the camera picked up. It is amazing how much this parallels what is happening when you see the world around you. Your senses pick up the different vibrations from the outside world, just like a camera's sensors do. In the case of your senses, however, you can pick up five different vibration rates, not just sight and sound. Your senses convert the different vibrations into electrical nerve impulses and transmit them to the brain. The signals are then rendered in the mind's energy field to as closely as possible replicate the original physical source. You become aware of what is going on in front of you by being aware of its mental image rendered in your mind, just like you become aware of the ball game in California by being aware of what is rendered on your TV screen in Florida. You're not out there in the world. You're inside. You're way back inside. Though the world is happening everywhere, you only experience the part that is picked up by your senses and rendered in your mind. Mind is no longer empty. It has formed its energy into the exact image of what is within the scope of your senses. As we discussed, you are not looking out into the world. The outside is being reproduced in your mind, and you are looking at that mental image. It's really not that different than when you are dreaming. In the dream state, images are being created in the mind, and you are looking at them. The waking state is the same, except that the mental images are being generated by the senses instead of by the mind itself. These mental images that form in the mind are like the images that form on your flat-screen TV. The screen was blank, but now it has taken on the form of the ball game in California. Your mind was empty, but now it has taken on the form of the outside world around you. Your mind is so brilliant, your flat-screen TV has a digital signal processor that takes the received digital signal, decodes it, and renders it onto the screen and through the speakers. Your mind takes the encoded nerve impulses and reproduces the entire scene in front of you, including depth perception, as well as adding touch, smell, and taste. It renders all this detail made out of the higher energy vibration of the mind. This exact rendering of the outside world is one of the primary functions of your mind. It allows you in there to experience the outside world. The mind is such an amazing gift. It is naturally formless, yet it can create forms that are more brilliant than those made by the most powerful computer. Mind is really the first personal computer. In fact, it is so personal that it doesn't need any external form. Its display screen is inside, its computing and graphic capability are inside, and you don't need a keyboard, mouse, or voice recognition to communicate with it. It is so close to you that it responds to your will and the slightest impulse from your heart. We have now gone from empty mind to a mind that renders the outside world so that you can experience your surroundings. Experience is the nectar of life. You're in there, and you're capable of experiencing because of the rendering capability of your mind. Of what meaning is life if you don't experience it? We spent a lot of time discussing how the outside world was created, billions of years of stellar activity resulting in what appears around you. You saw how it was created. Now you see how the consciousness, which does not belong to the world of form, can experience it through the miracle of mind. In truth, consciousness is the most profound miracle, an essence that knows that it knows that it knows. Everything else is something you're conscious of. The true magic is consciousness itself. When consciousness is simply experiencing reality as image in the mind, That is what we call being in the present moment. At this point in our discussion, there's nowhere else to be. The real world is outside. It is being reflected in your mind, and you are aware of the image right in front of you. In this very simple state, you're experiencing what you were meant to experience, the gift of the moment that's being given to you. It comes in, and you learn from it simply because you experience it. There are no distractions. There is just total oneness with the moment in front of you. Everyone has had some rare moments like this. Perhaps it took a beautiful sunset to bring you to such a state of one-pointed consciousness. You were driving around a corner, and all of a sudden, the sun was setting with beautiful purple, orange, and magenta. It was the most beautiful thing you'd ever seen, and it completely blew your mind. What does that mean, it blew your mind? It means there was nothing left in your mind but that image of the sunset. Not the mortgage, not the problem with the boyfriend, not the worries from the past. The only experience you were having was this beautiful sunset coming in through your eyes, rendering in your mind, and merging with your entire being. Your entire consciousness was centered and focused on the experiencing you were having instead of being scattered all over the place. It was a truly spiritual experience. That is what the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali describes as the experiencer and the experience becoming one. You have allowed a merger between subject and object. There's nothing distracting your consciousness from what is happening right in front of you. This is the yogic state of dharana, one-pointed concentration. You've had other experiences that approach this state of one-pointed absorption. Sometimes in intimate moments with someone you love, when everything is just right, you lose yourself in the moment. All of a sudden, total beauty and peace come over you. When consciousness merges with the object of consciousness, you can feel the presence of God. In yogic philosophy, the self is called Sat-Chit-Ananda, eternal conscious bliss. When self focuses one-pointedly on a single object, one experiences the nature of self, total peace, contentment, and overwhelming bliss. This is available to us at any time if we can just learn to enter the undistracted state of one-pointed consciousness. Chapter 12, Birth of the Personal Mind. Why don't we live in an ecstatic state of one-pointed consciousness all the time? What went wrong? What caused the fall from this proverbial garden? It's very simple. The world comes in, and it's beautiful. The very act of experiencing it is tremendously moving when it comes all the way back into you. However, that doesn't mean it all feels the same. Heat feels different from cold, because it is different. That doesn't mean that one is better than the other. They just feel different. Somebody gently touches you, and that feels very different from if they bump into you. Different things are experienced in different ways. The Buddhists say everything has its nature. A coiled rattlesnake comes into the mind as a very different experience than a butterfly landing on your arm. That rattlesnake is giving off its nature, emanating its particular vibration. That vibration is awesome in its own way, but it certainly doesn't create the same inner experience as the butterfly. There's nothing wrong with this. It's very real. What's wrong with having a variety of experiences? If a butterfly landed on you every moment, it would become so normal that it would be nothing. God knew how to create a world that would always be exciting. Your consciousness actually expands because of the knowledge that flows into it. You are learning and growing through the experiences you're having. This learning through life is true spiritual growth. It is the evolution of the soul. Just like everything you learn makes you smarter, every experience you have makes you wiser. When the presence of a rattlesnake comes into your mind, true, it's not a comfortable inner experience. It doesn't feel the same as the butterfly, but it's just as rich. It's just as important. If you're willing to be open at this level, you're still in the idyllic garden. There are no problems. There's just learning experiences. No matter what happens, you are becoming greater. Unfortunately, that is not how we live. Something went very wrong. Let's take this fall from the garden in slow motion. First, something comes in. Let's start with the rattlesnake. It's not a particularly comfortable experience. In fact, a hissing rattlesnake is meant to be an uncomfortable experience. It may even generate discomfort at a survival level. That would be a strong inner reaction to the outer experience. But this uncomfortable inner reaction isn't bad per se. It's just a different vibration. Just like some colors are soothing and others are harsh. Colors aren't bad or good. They're just different vibration rates of the electromagnetic spectrum. You can learn how to be comfortable with these different vibrations. A rattlesnake is not going to stay there rattling your whole life. It's going to come, it's going to go, and its uncomfortable vibrations are going to go with it. Then something else will happen. You live in a happening place filled with growthful experiences. You are simply in there experiencing creation as it comes in and passes through you. You don't practice that level of acceptance, however. You in there who is experiencing what's rendering your mind, you have the ability to resist what is not comfortable to you. You are given free will. You can use that will very much like inner hands to push away thoughts and emotions if they don't feel right. Surely you've done that. That resistance is an act of will. Will is an innate power you have. It is actually a power that emanates from consciousness. Just as the sun stays where it is in space, but emanates rays that have great power, so consciousness remains at its source, but its awareness emanates out onto whatever it focuses on. There is great power when consciousness is focused on something, just as there is great power when the sun's rays are focused through a magnifying glass. You can feel the power of one-pointed concentration. It is indeed concentrated consciousness. That is the source of the power of will. The power of will plays a very important role in understanding how the mind developed from a place of clarity to one of confusion. You've surely noticed that your awareness doesn't fall evenly on all objects that render in your mind. You pay attention to some objects more than others. If the vibration of the object was more comfortable or uncomfortable, you either liked it or didn't like it. This is the foundation of how the personal mind got built, like and dislike. It happens at a very primal level. Basically, it depends on whether you in there have the ability to experience something that comes in without doing anything about it, other than fully experiencing it. This is the ability to allow objects to simply pass through. If an inner experience is not neutral to you, it draws your consciousness to focus on it. The moment that happens, the things passing through your mind are no longer even. One has stood out from the rest. All it took was for you to focus your consciousness on it. Your consciousness is a force, and you are focusing that force on a particular mental object. When the force of consciousness is focused on a mental object, that object cannot pass through the mind like the other objects. Just as the solar winds interfere with objects passing through space, so focused consciousness is a force that affects objects passing through the mind. When you focus consciousness on a particular mental form, you impede that form's ability to pass through the mind. The very act of concentrating on it makes it stay in your mind. You know this. When you want to do math in your mind, you concentrate on the numbers so they will stay long enough for you to manipulate them. In fact, any time you want to hold something in your mind, you must focus your consciousness on it so it does not just fade away. Concentration of consciousness freezes forms in the mind so that they don't just pass through. Thus, when you saw a rattlesnake, it might as well have been a standalone item in your mind. The truth is there were trees, grass, sky, and other items rendered in your mind aside from the snake. But you focused your consciousness on the rattlesnake and let the rest pass through. Interestingly, because you focused so much consciousness on it, you froze the experience of the snake in your mind. There was no way you were going to let this uncomfortable experience all the way in, and that is the birth of resistance. Do you know what that means, letting it all the way in? We discussed this earlier regarding the beautiful sunset and the perfect romantic experience. You wanted to fully experience these beautiful moments, so you opened up and let them pass all the way back into your being. These are the special moments in life when something touches you to the core of your being. No way that rattlesnake is going all the way in there. You don't have to think about it. Resistance is simply a natural response to something that's not comfortable, you try to keep it at a distance. Have you ever kept something at a distance in there? Perhaps something someone said that hurt you in the past, maybe an awkward stage you went through when you were young, or even a terrible divorce. Of course you have. But that doesn't mean the event didn't happen. It wouldn't be in there if it hadn't already happened. You can't stop the event from having happened, but you don't have to let it all the way in. Mind is a big place. There's plenty of room between where the experience is first imaged in your mind and where you actually fully experience it. You can use will to keep the mental image at a distance from you. This is a very primal act of resistance. Now that you have resisted experiencing the rattlesnake and let the rest of the moment pass through, here comes a butterfly. It lands on you, which is such a beautiful experience that you naturally focus on it. When it starts to fly off, you don't want it to go away. So you use your will to hold on to the mental image. This is what Buddhists call clinging. You can't hold on to the butterfly itself because it flew away. So you try to hold on to the mental thought pattern of the butterfly. You push away what it was like to experience the rattlesnake, and you cling to what it was like to experience the butterfly. Neither of these mental patterns can finish their journey through the mind. Not only do you lose out on fully experiencing them to the depth of your being, you're also left with these mental patterns stuck in your mind. Neither rattlesnake nor butterfly remain before you, but they are left as patterns in the mind's energy field. Such is the power of like and dislike. Both clinging and resisting keep the mental renderings in your mind. This is very important to understand. Experiential mind was meant to be like a clear TV screen. It renders the image being sent to it. But now you've held on to images that are no longer being generated by the outside world. They got stuck in your mind as mental patterns. And as a result, you're out of harmony with reality. You were in there experiencing the gift of reality. Now you're also experiencing the patterns you held on to in your mind. These patterns in your mind are totally different from the patterns in other people's mind. Each person's trapped mental patterns are unique and very personal. They come from how we interacted with our past experiences. Since we've all had different past experiences and interacted with them differently, the impressions held in our minds are totally different. This is the birth of the personal mind. The problem is, reality is not personal. As you've already seen, we didn't create this world. We're simply experiencing the miracle of creation unfolding around us. Yes, there are rattlesnakes and butterflies in the world, along with lots of other things. But now there are rattlesnakes and butterflies in your mind, even when they're not actually in front of you. Now that you've held on to these leftover mental impressions in your mind, reality has to compete with them for your attention. Your ability to fully focus on the outside world is going to be hindered by the constant distraction of these inner impressions. Chapter 13. Fall from the garden. Resistance is the beginning of what can be considered the fall from the garden. You were just fine being aware of this awesome, ever-changing creation. It presented constant gifts of experiences for you to learn and grow from. Take the gift of music. When you are deeply absorbed in music, there are no stray thoughts, only the music effortlessly coming in and feeding the depth of your being. You can be raised to a state of ecstasy while listening to music. When the mind is clear, everything comes in that way. You're either in a heavenly state experiencing what is pouring into you, or you are deeply absorbed in the inner stillness of your being. You have returned to the garden. Everything is effortlessly beautiful. Once you hold on to rattlesnakes and butterflies in your mind, you are unable to stay in that pure state of consciousness. These two mental patterns have become powerfully charged objects that draw your attention toward them. When the mind was clear, what attracted your consciousness was the rendering of the outside world as it passed through. This rendering was very entertaining and fulfilling, but since you had nothing going with it, it just came and went. In contrast, the powerfully charged objects you have held in your mind do not come and go. The world in front of you comes and goes, but these mental objects remain because you're holding on to them in your mind. Furthermore, since they are differentiated as more important than the rest, your consciousness becomes more distracted by these mental objects. Everything is no longer equal, and this creates a major problem. Next thing you know, you're walking down the road and there's a rope. But the rope no longer feels the same as it would have before you saw the rattlesnake. The rope reminds you of the rattlesnake. What does "remind you of" mean? It's not a rattlesnake, it's a rope. Nonetheless, when the rope comes in, consciousness now has a choice: pay full attention to the rope that came in, or be distracted by the negative rattlesnake image stuck in your mind. The mind will immediately join these two mental objects together as one, and you will get scared. Scared by a rope? Yes, terrified by a rope. A similar thing happens with the image of the butterfly stuck in your mind. After the butterfly flies away, you're still focusing on the image in your mind. You're still feeling good about it and trying to hold on to it, even though it's no longer part of your here and now reality. Then something new comes in from the outside, like a person walking by. Your mind may be rendering this new image perfectly, but your consciousness is not fully seeing it. Your consciousness is still distracted by the butterfly image that got left in your mind. It used to be that the moment in front of you was the experience you were having inside. Now you have a preference. You would rather experience the mental image of the butterfly than the reality in front of you. There has become a whole new world for consciousness to focus on, the world you built in your mind. That world does not match the reality of creation. That inner world is your own personal creation, made out of the mental objects you didn't let pass through. That's what those images in your mind represent, things that happened in the past that you willfully kept in your mind. As we shall see, these impressions are the initial seed that eventually grew into the self-concept or personal self. To see this more clearly, let's once again look at the example of a flat-screen TV. When the first plasma screens came out, they had after images. Manufacturers warned you that if you pause an image for too long, it would actually burn a shadow of the image into the plasma screen. When the show continued, the old image would still be there. Would you enjoy watching TV like that? You finish the news, but when you turn on a movie, the after image and the newscaster is still superimposed on top of your movie. That is exactly what is happening with the butterfly and the rattlesnake. You can no longer clearly see what is going on in front of you because you have these other images on the screen in your mind. You've messed up your screen. You didn't mean to. It seemed innocent to push experiences aside when you didn't find them pleasant. Where do you think they went when you resisted them? They got stored as lasting impressions in your mind. It is worth looking at the effect of these leftover images in slow motion. In the beginning, the miracle of creation took place. It created form that is coming in through your senses so you can experience it. Apparently, at some point, you didn't like certain vibrations, so you pushed them away when they rendered inside. That willful resistance caused them to stay in the mind. This is where personal comes from. We said earlier that nothing is really personal, but you have chosen to fill the sanctity of your mind with frozen images from your past. These impressions will stay in your mind and will pull your consciousness toward them. You now have a limited and biased view of reality that will distort all of your experiences for the rest of your life. That is the power of the personal mind. So far, we've only focused on the rattlesnake you resisted and the butterfly you clung to. Those alone are sufficient to distort your experience of reality. But be honest with yourself. How many of these charged impressions do you have? You've done this your entire life. Plus, these stored impressions build on each other. Now that you have a stored rattlesnake impression in there, you can easily get scared by the sound of a baby's rattle. In fact, if the discomfort is bad enough, you may choose not to be around babies. That's a personal preference, and this is where all personal preferences come from. Once you create preferences, they will dominate your entire experience of life. These impressions that stayed stuck in the mind are called samskaras in yoga science. They are discussed in the ancient Upanishad texts. How could people know about this thousands of years before Sigmund Freud discussed his theories on suppression? It is because they were meditators. They didn't need someone to teach them about this. They saw it going on in their own minds. If you are quietly centered in conscious awareness, You can see what is passing before you. You are the ultimate experiencer of your mind. You're just not paying attention. Instead of paying attention, you're getting so uptight about wanting butterflies and not wanting rattlesnakes that you're losing your centered awareness. When the world around you comes in and hits or activates your stored patterns, you can no longer observe reality objectively. Your consciousness gets drawn into the activated samskaras, and everything becomes distorted. This is the foundation of the psyche, your personal self. What is the psyche? It's something you built inside the mind that's about you. I'm the one who doesn't like rattlesnakes. I'm the one who likes butterflies. You just built a self-concept. Someone else doesn't have that. They have a psyche built around thunderstorms, dogs that bite, and kittens that snuggle. Everyone has had different experiences, and therefore everyone is building a different personal mind inside. No one is doing it purposely. It's reactive. It happens quite naturally because you're not ready to openly experience life. The highest state is to be comfortable learning and growing from life's experiences. But if you're not comfortable with some experiences, use your will to resist them. That merely means you're not evolved enough in that area. There's physical evolution and there's spiritual evolution. They both involve adaptability to your environment, the former for your body, the latter for you in there, the soul. When events come in, they're meant to be experienced by you. If you have trouble experiencing them, that's the whole purpose of learning to accept. What right do you have to either cling to or resist reality? You didn't make reality, and you weren't here for the billions of years that created it. We're back to, do you like the fact that Saturn has rings? Your answer was, it's none of my business. That's the correct response for every bit of reality that took billions of years to end up in front of you. The real question is not whether you like things. It's why are you not okay with them? The reason is actually quite simple, because you can't digest them. It's hard to let some experiences just pass through without residual disturbance. But you need to learn how to do this. You learn to play tennis. You learn to play the piano. You learn all kinds of things, maybe even calculus. You didn't know how to do these things to start with. They were surely uncomfortable until you learned to be comfortable with them. The soul can learn, you in there, the consciousness, can learn to experience reality. In order to do so, you must not resist. Otherwise, you're going to immediately push reality away. That's what acceptance is, non-resistance. It is having the commitment to fully allow reality to pass directly into the highest part of your being. In the end, all you are surrendering is your resistance to reality. You learn to let it come in, even if it's not comfortable, as it pours into you. The same thing is true with positive experiences, like the butterfly. Somebody you like comes up to you and says, you know, I really like you. You're very attractive to me and I enjoy being with you. That is such a nice experience that you immediately cling to the beautiful things they said. They go back to what they were doing, but you can't. You can't focus on your work because the impression left in your mind keeps distracting you. This is the opposite of be here now. You're practicing be there then. You just had a beautiful experience and you ruined it. You ruined it by holding on to it like the butterfly. You ruined it by creating a preference about one of life's experiences. Now every time the phone rings and it's not the person who said the nice things, you get disappointed. Be aware that you did this. Somebody said something nice to you and you couldn't handle it. You couldn't just let it be a nice experience. Instead, you clung to it in your mind and it actually messed you up. Whether you use your will to resist or cling, these leftover impressions will stay in your mind. You've now created an entire layer of mind that's holding your samskaras, your unfinished patterns from the past. You will come to see that these acts of clinging and resisting determine the quality of your life. These impressions distract your consciousness from the reality of the current moment. What is more, if you are constantly distracted with these samskaras in your mind, you're never going to experience who you really are. There is a vast difference between memory and a samskara. Just as your computer has memory storage capability, so does your mind. It is a natural function of the mind to store compressed versions of what was received by the senses into its long-term memory. These stored memories can be retrieved with the slightest intent. You learn a person's name, meaning it is stored in long-term memory. When you see them again, the name normally comes up into the forefront of your mind without effort, though admittedly, sometimes we have to apply willful effort to bring the memory back. These are the fairly normal ways memory is stored and recalled. In drastic contrast to normal memory, if you experience an event that you have trouble handling when it renders in your mind, you will use will to either consciously or subconsciously suppress it. You don't want it in your mind at all, not presently or long term, so you try to push it out of your mind completely. When you do this, you're resisting the entire event, what came in through the senses, what you felt emotionally, and what your thoughts were about it. This resisted package of the experience cannot pass through you in the normal fashion because you won't let it. The entire energy of the event is locked inside your mind and it does not sit there quietly. Because it keeps trying to release its blocked energy, it can distort your memories of the past as well as disturb your experience of the present. Blocked energies in the mind are like a computer virus that distorts both the conscious and subconscious minds. In later chapters, we will deeply explore how these blocked energy patterns, samskaras, also block your natural energy flow. When you commit to spiritual growth, you work on letting go of the stored blockages from the past and not storing any more from the present. This does not mean the mind's normal memory storage process does not take place. You are not willfully forgetting life's experiences. You are simply not resisting or clinging to the experiences and thus not storing them as samskaras. They remain harmless, objective memories. Let's take an example very close to home for some people. You have an ex-husband. I don't want to see him. I don't want to talk about him ever again. I don't even like it when someone says his name. It makes me feel uncomfortable, even years after the divorce. This is not objective memory talking. This is definitely a samskara. You say you've divorced your ex-husband, but you really didn't. He's still in there bothering you. You don't even want to go to a party if you think he might be there. You have kept these impressions blocked in your mind, and ultimately, you have created an alternate universe in which you're still dealing with your ex-husband. Normal memory is not like this. It is well-behaved. Like a computer's memory, it doesn't pop up by itself. It does not have blocked energies that need to be released. Normal memory is there when you need it. It does not haunt you throughout your life. Fortunately, most things you encounter in life are neutral to you. They pass through unblocked and are available for recall when appropriate. You've driven by white lines on the road many times, but they don't come back by themselves at inopportune times. Neither do the cars, trees, buildings, and myriad other objects you encounter each day. They come in and they pass through. But there are a few things that are harder to deal with inside, and therefore you resist them or you cling to them. This is how you fell out of the garden of reality. Impressions stayed inside your mind and became the foundation blocks upon which you built your psyche. Chapter 14, The Veil of the Psyche. Your psyche is like a computer program running in your mind based on your samskaras. It's in there talking to you about things that happened before, what you wish would happen now, and what you hope does or doesn't happen tomorrow. You've actually created an alternate reality inside your mind that is very complex. It's a tremendous menagerie of the stored moments you are not able to let go of. At this point, you don't even need another rattlesnake to get you disturbed. The fact that the experience of the snake is stuck in your mind means other things will remind you of it. In fact, you can remind yourself of it without the need of an external reminder. You're driving down the street, minding your own business. Suddenly you remember how scary that snake was, and you get scared again. We're not dealing with reality anymore. We have such a mess built up in there that there's no wonder that we have so much trouble with life. Such is the nature of the personal mind. Regardless of how messy it gets in there, the fact remains that the personal mind is not you, no more than your TV screen is you. But it's much more difficult to objectively watch your mind than your TV screen. This is because of the power of the impressions you have stored in your mind. These past impressions compete with the image of reality coming from the outside and make it hard to tell which is which. It is difficult to obtain a seat of objective observation when it gets so confusing in there. Some scars are not to be taken lightly. They seriously distort your experience of life. Let's take the example of a psychological Rorschach test, often referred to as an inkblot test. The psychologist holds up an inkblot and asks what you see. You immediately respond that you see people making love, or perhaps mommy and daddy fighting. In other words, the Rorschach test stimulates the patterns you stored inside your mind, causing you to see what's not actually there. The truth is, the whole world is a giant Rorschach test. The world is a flow of atoms unfolding in front of you. It's no more personal than the ink blots, but it's hitting your samskaras, and that stimulates stored mental and emotional reactions. Now, instead of experiencing what is passing by outside, you're experiencing the likes, dislikes, beliefs, and judgments you stored inside. These impressions are so strong that you actually think they are what is really out there, just like the inkblots. The personal mind has taken over your entire life. You are no longer free to enjoy the experiences that are actually happening. You are forced to deal with what your mind says is happening. Let's look a little deeper into how some scars affect your life. We've discussed that what is coming from the outside stimulates your mental blockages from the past. Past experiences were uncomfortable when you first resisted them, and they're going to be uncomfortable when they come back up. To make matters worse, just as with the Rorschach test, you're not seeing what's actually outside. You're seeing your inner issues projected onto the outside. That's why life seems so scary, and why it seems to always be hitting your weak spots. Truth is, life is not hitting your weak spots. You're projecting your weak spots onto life. Yet not everything you stored in it was negative. You hold on to some positive things from the past. The problem is they're not happening anymore, and that is disappointing. If you go back to the same place where you saw the butterfly and it's not there, it becomes a negative experience. Understand, you've just made life a lose-lose situation. If anything reminds you of what bothered you before, you lose. If you're not getting to re-experience what you liked before, you lose. This is in drastic contrast to what Zen calls beginner's mind. If you're not expecting anything in particular from a situation, and then something special happens, it can touch you really deeply. It could be a beautiful sunset, the first unexpected kiss, or some other welcome surprise. If it touches you so deeply because you have no samskaras in your mind about the event, you have beginner's mind. Otherwise, you'll be expecting something based on prior experiences, and that will interfere with the spontaneity of the event. The end result is that these samskaras have ruined your life. You've made it so that unless something drastically different happens to pull you out of this preference system, you can't feel anything fully. That's why some people must go to the extremes to get a rush. It's also why some people try to keep everything exactly the same so life doesn't disturb their samskaras. In either case, trying to keep the mind a decent place to live in can force people to look for escapes such as drinking and drugs. You get to the point where you're running around trying to appease your mind. Eventually, you will come to realize that it's not the job, the spouse, or the car that gets old. It's listening to the mess in your mind that gets old. While all these patterns from the past are blocked in your mind, you in there can neither experience the miracle of life unfolding before you, nor can you experience the natural beauty within you. Your awareness is completely distracted by these stored mental patterns, and you must devote your days and nights to serving them. You can no longer experience reality. You're stuck experiencing yourself. There's a concept in Zen known as just tree. It fits perfectly with our discussion. The story goes as follows. There was a young Buddhist monk in a monastery who would go for daily sessions with the Zen master. The master would ask him some questions, and the monk would leave. One time, when the young monk walked in, the master looked at him and remarked, "What happened to you? You look so alive and filled with light." The monk was surprised. "What do you mean?" "I see a difference in you, my son. What happened?" The monk told him, "I was walking across the courtyard and saw the big oak tree. I stopped and looked at it. I had seen it many times before, but this time I saw just tree. I just saw the tree. Somehow it took me to such a deep place that I felt an awakening. I felt a moment of enlightenment. It took me beyond myself. That tree has been there for 100 years, the master reflected. You've walked by that tree every single day since you've been here. Yes, said the student, but when I previously walked by the tree, it often reminded me of the tree Buddha sat under when he reached enlightenment. Other times, the tree reminded me of the one I fell out of when I was little. The tree always stimulated thought patterns from my past. This time, I saw just tree. The master smiled. Just tree is what we talked about at the beginning of our discussion of mind. The tree comes in, renders in your mind, and that's all you see. In contrast, the tree comes in, renders in your mind, and stimulates any past samskaras you have about trees. Your samskara mind becomes activated, and your consciousness is scattered between the primary image of the tree and the secondary explosion that takes place inside. The secondary explosion is the reaction within your mind due to the stored patterns there. You can't have pure experiences anymore. The young monk did. He saw just tree. If you didn't understand this before, hopefully you do now, a Zen master would be pleased with you because just tree is a very deep concept in Zen Buddhism. There is nothing wrong with the mind itself, just like there is nothing wrong with a computer per se. It's how you use these powerful gifts that can cause a problem. There's almost no limit to the brilliance of mind. People think Einstein was smart, but they don't understand their own brilliance. We all have the human mind, every single one of us. We don't have a possum mind, a squirrel mind, or even an ape mind. We have the human mind, and the human mind is brilliant. Chapter 15, The Brilliant Human Mind. What's so special about the human mind? Let's take a look. For billions and billions of years, while the planet Earth was spinning through space, the process of evolution took place. There were minerals, then plants, then animals, all formed from the atoms created in the stars. The planet had been floating through space for 4.5 billion years before modern humans showed up. It's worth noting that before humans showed up, life on Earth for the other species stayed pretty much the same. Food, shelter, and survival were the name of the game. Things haven't really changed that much for them. The monkeys lived in trees for tens of millions of years, just as they do now. The fish swam in the waters for hundreds of millions of years, just as they do now. Everything on Earth stayed pretty much the same until you humans showed up with your human mind. You discovered electricity and made the nighttime bright. You built giant skyscrapers and machinery that never existed before. You even dug into the earth, extracted minerals, and developed advanced materials like silicon chips. Then you built a rocket ship, got in, and flew to the moon. Compare that to what any other animals have done. They're living exactly the same as they did 1,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago, 1,000,000 years ago. You're not. You used to live in caves. Now you're planning to live on Mars. What did that? Did God hide a rocket ship and you found it somewhere? No, your mind did that. Your mind figured out everything was made of atoms. Then you figured out how to split the atom. The human mind actually figured out how the universe was made, all the way down to the quantum level. Your mind put up the Hubble Space Telescope that can see back to the beginning of creation. The Hubble can pick up light that has been traveling through space for more than 13 billion years. This allows us to see what was happening 13 billion years ago. Can you even think about that? The fact is you can, because you have a human mind. The human mind is an amazing thing. That is some serious stuff we've figured out. You're back in there, deep inside, and you have the use of a brilliant mind. That said, what is the average human doing with their mind? Einstein used his mind to ponder thought experiments about the behavior of light, gravity, and the physics of outer space, even though no human had ever been there. Meanwhile, you keep your mind busy with relationships, what people think of you, and how to get what you want and avoid what you don't want. You may not have Einstein's mind, but compared to any other living thing on Earth, your mind is brilliant. The question is not whether your mind is brilliant. The question is, what are you doing with that brilliance? What we see so far is that the mind by itself, without you interfering, is doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's giving you the gift of rendering the outside world for you to experience. But you had some trouble accepting that gift. You started resisting when it felt a little too uncomfortable and clinging when it felt a little too good. This caused the buildup of mental patterns inside of you. Now, processing current external experiences becomes distorted by the reactions of past samskaras. You can think of this as layers of the mind. The first layer is where the rendering of the present external experience is taking place. We can call that the here and now layer. The next layer is the stored patterns from the past that you didn't release when the external experience was over. We can call that the samskara layer. But there's yet another layer. This layer is what you are doing with your brilliant mind, trying to solve the discomforts created by the samskaras. This is the personal thoughts layer, and it is the one you identify with the most. You think this is who you are. The combination of these three layers is what we call the personal mind. Yours is completely unique to you and you alone. We create the personal thoughts layer when we use the tremendous intellectual power of our minds to conceptualize an outside world that will not bother us and will in fact make us feel good. It seems perfectly logical. The problem is, what we think will make us feel good or bad is simply the result of blocked mental patterns from the past. If we use our mind's brilliance to develop thought patterns based on how everyone and everything needs to be for us to feel okay, we have limited our life to serving our samskaras. And our personal thoughts don't stop here. What good is it to analyze how you need things to be if you're not going to think about how to get them that way? First, we figure out the strategy of how to be okay. Then we figure out the tactics of how to make it happen. Strategy and tactics? That's military training. In essence, we are at war with the world. The personal mind has taken on the task of how to get the world unfolding in front of you to be the way you want. That should set off alarm bells, because we've already discussed in great detail where the world in front of you comes from, and it has nothing to do with what's going on inside your head. The moment in front of you is the result of all the natural forces that cause it to be as it is. The preference system in your mind is the result of the past experiences that you couldn't handle. These are two totally different sets of forces that have nothing to do with each other. For example, there are current impersonal forces that are causing it to rain. There are past personal forces that are causing you not to like the rain. You've just pitted yourself against the universe, and you're going to lose. Nevertheless, the personal mind thinks it's right. You actually think that the universe should be the way you want it to be. Part 4, Thoughts and Dreams. Chapter 16, The Abstract Mind. Fortunately, your mind has a layer beyond the layers of the personal mind. It has been called the impersonal mind, the abstract mind, or even the purely intellectual mind. This layer of mind is not distracted by the inner commotion caused by your samskaras. It is free to soar unhindered into the pure brilliance and creativity of a higher expression of mind. This higher layer of your mind, which we will call the abstract layer, is what allows you to build rocket ships, develop air conditioning, and discover the existence of atoms. The abstract mind is what truly makes humans great. You're not limited to experiencing only through your senses. You're free to explore in the realm of pure intellectual mind. Your mind can take you pretty much anywhere. Do you want to build rovers that can go to Mars so you can explore the planet on the internet? Wonderful. You can do that because your mind is capable of expanding beyond the limit of your senses and the limit of your personal thoughts. Mind can operate at many levels. The question is, what are you doing with it? Intellectually, you have the ability to take images from the outside and do creative things with them. You are free to use your mind's power to be artistically abstract and intellectually logical. A perfect example of the latter would be Einstein's thought experiments. Einstein came up with many of his greatest theories sitting in his armchair and reasoning out very abstract concepts. This is a great tribute to the power of our minds. It is a far cry from getting lost in your personal thoughts and making these thoughts about yourself the total meaning of your life. Once you create thoughts about what you want and don't want and how to force the world to be that way, you will never be okay inside. You will lose much of the great power of abstract thought because you cannot abstract from yourself. Life will become a battle between reality and your mental preferences. This use of mind is called the personal mind because its thoughts are all about you and your concepts, views, and preferences. The teachings of mindfulness, which center awareness on the current moment, encourage you to focus on something other than the personal mind. Focusing on the moment is one way to get your consciousness off its incessant addiction to the personal. Another way to transcend the personal mind is by using your intellectual mind to create and do things that are not personal in nature. This includes being an engineer who reasons out problems, or a medical researcher who studies diseases and how to cure them. Artistry, computer science, mathematics, all these are examples of beautiful uses of the impersonal mind. The mind is great. It's just not supposed to be used for storing all your personal preferences and then thinking the whole world is supposed to match what you stored. The outside world is simply not going to magically match what you've stored in your mind. In fact, it's not very intelligent to expect it to. Is it really intelligent to devote your life to fighting with life so it aligns with your past good and bad experiences? How can you enjoy life if you're always worrying and struggling to get it your way? That's what all of our societies are doing, and that's what almost every human being has done. People just haven't evolved enough to learn not to do that. Rich people, poor people, sick people, healthy people, married people, single people, they are all bound in the same way. If they get what they want, they are relatively okay. If they don't get what they want, they suffer to a greater or lesser extent. Fortunately, you do not have to live this way. There's a much higher way to live life, but it requires that you change how you interact with your mind and with the life unfolding before you. To understand this transformation, let's first take a look at how you even decide what you want and don't want. If you pay attention, you will see that your past experiences determine your preferences. You didn't just make it all from scratch. Your views, opinions, and preferences are formulated based on data from your past. For example, let's say you're totally secure about your love relationship until you hear that your friends had a breakup and they're miserable. All of a sudden, you start worrying about your own relationship. You were fine before you heard about your friends, but now you're not. You stored the concept of a breakup inside your mind, even though it really had nothing to do with you. You took it personally. Is it possible to process the information without it getting stuck in your mind? Of course it is. Your friends had a problem, and they shared it with you. It came into your mind, passed through your consciousness, and you experienced the feeling of compassion. The interaction actually made you a greater being. You were able to fully absorb the reality of life without it getting stuck in your mind. If you want to recall it later, you can willfully restore it from memory in all its glory, but it will not keep coming back by itself. Since it did not get stuck in the conscious mind or shoved into the subconscious, it will not adversely affect your life. It actually made you a better person because you were able to handle the experience. On the other hand, if you were not able to process the experience without resisting it, it will stay stuck in the conscious mind and create havoc. If you really resist it, it will get shoved down into the subconscious, where it will fester and spread its disturbance throughout the mind. In either case, you are storing what you are afraid of in your mind. If you do this, you will be afraid of your own thoughts. How could you not be? You made a collection of unpleasant thoughts in your mind, and they are going to keep coming back up. Now, in order to live in there, the analytical aspect of mind must be utilized to figure out what needs to happen outside for you to be okay. This is where preferences come from. They are simply attempts to use outside events to solve the fact that you are not doing well inside. This results in the constant practice of judging everything that's unfolding based on your preferences. It's easy to see why people don't agree with each other. Nobody else has had the experiences that came in through your eyes. What you have inside your mind is completely different from what others have inside their mind. It can't be otherwise, because the data in your mind came from the experiences you had. Nobody else had those experiences, not even close, not your spouse, your children, or your friends. Not only were your past experiences different, but you processed them differently. We can certainly force ourselves to conform to other ways of thinking in order to gain acceptance, but that just makes living inside all the more complicated. You not only have your default way of thinking resulting from your stored past impressions, but now you must suppress parts of that in order to conform to the group mindset. No wonder it gets messy in there. You are holding all that personal stuff inside your mind, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The inevitable result will be that if the moment in front of you happens to align well with your stored patterns, you feel great. You feel open, excited, and enthused. If it doesn't align well with your stored patterns, you get upset. You immediately close, get defensive, and maybe even get depressed. Now we're back to the question we asked earlier. What's it like living in there? Sometimes it's nice. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's heaven. Sometimes it's hell. This is why. It is not because God made it that way. You did this. You were given free will, and what you did with your free will was make a mess out of your mind. Instead of being in awe that the moment in front of you even exists, you fight with it to make it match what you want. Chapter 17. Serve mine or fix it. All your preferences exist because you stored experiences from the past inside your personal mind. This makes it difficult to live in there, but instead of fixing it, you double down and try to satisfy your preferences. I want to feel good, and the way to feel good is by getting the house I want.